Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
My sneezes are cute. My hiccups are horrendous. That was a Rue hiccup?
No.
Welcome to Radio Dale number 54. This week in music history, Madonna's Golden Globes.
On who charted Hot Country Songs.
Brew's 60-second tip of the week, scheduling tweets.
For the roundtable, we're discussing the blog How to Rescue Radio by Doc Searles.
And we're going to be finishing off with a new single from Secret Broadcast called Filthy Souls.
All right, now, this week in music history. Let's get started.
Okay.
January 16th, 1979, born on this day, Aaliyah. She was unfortunately, her life was ended very early in a plane crash, but she was an awesome artist. So, happy birthday to Aaliyah. I liked her.
January 17th, 1981, Motley Crue formed when bass guitarist Nikki Sixx left the band in London and began rehearsing with drummer Tommy Lee and another vocalist who didn't become part of Motley Crue.
No.
But thank you to him for his work.
Thank you for your service, unknown person. January 18th, 1964, the Beatles made their U.S. chart debut when I Wanna Hold Your Hand entered the chart at number 45, just 10 days after its release, making it the fastest breaking and fastest selling single in Capitol Records history. And of course, it went on to spend 7 weeks at the number one position.
Some band called the Beatles.
The Beatles.
The Beatles. January 19th, 1997. Madonna won the Best Actress Award for her role in Evita at the Golden Globe Awards.
You know, she's a great actress.
I saw Evita. Don't cry for me.
Well, but she was, there was the baseball League of Their Own. She was in that movie True Blue with the song True Blue, which you can't find on any of her greatest hits.
She married that guy that directed movies and was in a really terrible one.
Guy Ritchie. And if you're interested in other musicians who have turned actors and won Golden Globes, check out my blog this week.
Yay!
Done.
Ding.
January 20th, 1975, the US top five singles were number 5, Stevie Wonder, Boogie On, Reggae Woman. Number 4, Ohio Players, Fire. Oh, I love that song. But now people only know it because of Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. I was about to say, that's song number 2. Fire. I don't know, but I know. Fire.
Yeah. Number 3, Barry Manilow, Mandy. Number 2, Neil Sedaka, Laughter in the Rain. And number 1, The Carpenters, Please, Mr. Postman. Please.
It was a weird time.
What a good year.
About that. It was just a really weird time in the 70s for music.
Very strange top five.
Yeah. January 21st, 2004. As the third season of American Idol was aired on US TV, a memo was leaked showing a list of songs banned from being performed at this year's auditions that included Elton John's Candle in the Wind and Fallen by Alicia Keys. Also, all songs by Bruce Springsteen, Mariah Carey, No Doubt, R. Kelly, Tom Petty, Korn and Linkin Park were not allowed after concerns over the cost of securing rights for the song's use, which is kind of funny because Mariah ended up being a judge on the show.
Yeah.
Later.
And I never watched American Idol, but I wonder if someone came in when Mariah was judging and they sang like
a Mariah song.
Oh.
You should never try to sing a Mariah song.
Yeah, you gotta like the highest note ever. January 22nd, 1983, the new 24-hour music video network, MTV, started broadcasting to the west coast of America after being picked up by Group W Cable Los Angeles.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of
cool.
that.
So they were kind of feeling it out, I guess?
Yeah.
Or whatever. West Coast.
West Coast. West
what?
Coast sign just happened. Oh. Anyways, that has been This Week in Music History.
And now it's time for Who Charted.
Who Charted?
Well, Rue, I can tell you who charted. And it's a lot of country artists. I went on to Billboard today, onto Billboard.com. and found a really cool list of the top 70 country songs between 1989 and 2014. Hmm. And scrolling through the list, without reading actually how they came up with this list, mm-hmm. I scrolled through it, was completely shocked. So what I'll do is I'll read the top 10, and then I'll read to you how they came up with the list. Now, there's a list of 70 songs. I'm just going to read you the top 10. But you're going to notice some massive songs that are missing from this top 10. Mm-hmm. And again, I will tell you how they came to this conclusion later. So
I predict number one will be Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks.
All right.
Go.
So the top 10 of the top 70 country songs from 1989 to 2014. Number 10, Love Without End, Amen by George Strait. Mm. Number 9, Check Yes or No by George Strait.
Oh.
Number 8, Somebody Like You, Keith Urban. Number 7, It's Your Love, Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Mm. Number 6, That's My Kind of Night by Luke Bryan.
What?
Number 5, We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, Taylor Swift.
Whoa.
Number 4, Amazed by Lone Star. Number 3, Just to See You Smile, Tim McGraw. Number 2, Wanted by Hunter Hayes. And number 1, Cruise by Florida Georgia Line.
Seems heavily skewed to newer music, I think.
Okay, so now that you all had the same thoughts that I had, mm-hmm. here's how Billboard came up with these songs. The top 70 country songs, 1989 to 2014 rankings, are based on actual performance on the weekly Hot Country Songs chart through the Billboard chart dated January 18, 2014. Titles are ranked based on an inverse point system, with weeks at number one earning the greatest value and weeks at the lower end of the chart earning the least. Prior to the Hot Country Songs implementation in January 1990 of monitored radio airplay by Nielsen BDS, titles on those lists had shorter reigns at number one and shorter chart lives. To ensure equitable representation of the biggest hits from all 25 years, certain eras were weighted to account for the difference between turnover rates from those decades and the turnover rates that have occurred since the advent of Nielsen music data. So it's all very confusing, but when you look at this list, and we've provided the link in our music in our show notes, it'll show you with every song they list, it shows its chart position. But so it's just interesting to see that. I was looking at the list, and I was thinking the number one would be like a Shania.
I was thinking Shania.
But then you look at how they came up with it, and again, it's all a lot of big words, but basically it's just how things have evolved with songs and charts over the years, and Nielsen wasn't, you know, monitoring for some of this. So yeah, you can see the complete list in our show notes, and of all 70 songs, and
cool.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's who charted.
That is who charted, according to Billboard's random algorithm.
The biggest charter was Florida Georgia Line. They charted big time.
They did chart big time.
They dropped a big old chart.
And they charted recently.
Anywho.
It is time for my 67... Sec 60... Oh, what's up? Today's tip is about scheduling posts on social media like Hootsuite and Social Bro to appear at a later time. Now, I see there being about two kinds of posts. There's the information posts, like tour dates or single releases, and then there's the more personal ones, which are like pictures. They're usually a bit more spontaneous, the kind of thing you just do on the fly. Now, information posts can be scheduled to appear throughout the week, and some personal posts can too. For instance, if you have a whole bunch of pictures in a gallery, you don't want to flood them all out at the same time, you could spread them out over a couple of weeks. So there are some pitfalls to posting. You could post outdated info, for instance, cancel a show. If you forget to remove that tweet, then you're going to post about it and people will think your show's still going on. You may seem robotic, so you're going to want to tweet like you're tweeting it right now, and you're going to want to pay close attention so that you reply if fans are talking to you. And it can be done in 20 minutes on a Monday morning and save a lot of headache. And that's my 60-second tip of the week.
How many seconds did that take?
60 seconds.
60 seconds. Shh.
Very nice.
And after that, it's now time for our roundtable discussion. And today we chose as sort of the basis a article which was written by a fellow named Doc Searles. And it is called How to Rescue Radio.
Radio needs to be rescued, Ru?
Apparently it does.
Wow.
And,
Please tell us more.
A lot of the issues that people are seeing with radio is that they feel like it's a little outdated, like it's time for a refresher. And Doc Searles has a lot of interesting points to make, both on the technical side and on the more programming side for rescuing radio, because radio's under a lot of pressure right now. There's competition from streaming audio services, from YouTube, from, I guess, satellite to a degree. Just everywhere around radio, there are other ways to get music.
And when we say radio, we mean commercial radio, yeah. So your 102.1,
yeah.
The Edge in Toronto, or CFOX in Vancouver.
Yeah, terrestrial radio, the kind of thing you'd listen to in your car, unless you have Sirius.
Yes.
In which case, you might be listening to that. So we printed up all of his points. He had a lot of points for various things, like suggestions to actual stations and networks, suggestions to people who do the technology and stuff like that. So we're going to kind of go down it and talk about it and discuss it with our roundtable.
And maybe even before we get into this conversation and going over the different points, you as the listener, whether you are a supporter or not of a terrestrial radio in general,
mm-hmm.
sit down and maybe even as you're listening or even after this podcast, make a list of stuff that you would love to see from your favorite terrestrial radio station.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll hear different things, suggestions that come from these articles and conversations we have about our ideas. But just, you know, think about what's missing for you and write it down, because we would love to have that kind of info shared with us. So that, you know,
oh, totally.
If we're on par with, you know, what maybe a general audience who is not involved in radio, what they're looking for
in
yeah.
radio. Yeah.
So let's get
definitely
into it.
Let's get into it. So we're going to jump right into his suggestions. Mm-hmm. Now, the first three for these stations, networks, and chains of radio are along the same lines, and they all involve the internet. And what he's basically suggesting is that radio look to the internet for some cues on what people want today. So right now, radio kind of acts like basically what it is. It's a broadcaster. So you have one person, we'll say, for an example, broadcasting a large audience of many people, where the internet is very much a one-on-one thing. When you tweet, you're sending your tweet maybe to your followers, but essentially your tweet is going directly to one person.
Yeah. Right.
It's being sent to one person, and that person can reply directly to you. The idea that your source, you are starting as a source, but there's a specific end rather than a mass group end. He's saying, try to act more like you are one person going out to one person. Be more engaging, more personal. Find a way to be a radio station directed to your fan rather than to your audience. And
I guess maybe think of a way, I guess, of explaining how me as an audience or a listener
mm-hmm.
of the station, how do I benefit from having that personal connection rather than being one of the many,
yeah.
just getting the information?
Yeah.
How do I benefit from, you know, feeling like they're talking to me and I have a personal connection to that station?
Is that a question?
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe it's just an open question to kind of...
I think having that kind of personal connection to anything makes you feel more involved.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we are in an age where anybody can be a content producer. Anybody can make something and put it online. So why should I be concerned about what you're doing? One of the best ways to do that is to actually make a personal connection with a person one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
To be responsive when they get in touch with you and to give them essentially what they want, which is a lot harder. Like, I don't want to slag on radio stations. They have a big job to do.
Yeah.
They're trying to be at least everything to some group of people, which is the demographic they're trying
yeah.
to reach. But the question is, how can a radio station actually be more of a one-on-one relationship with their audience, with an audience member, rather than just throwing everything out?
I think that really what it needs to do is satisfy that, like, social need
mm-hmm.
of acceptance that listeners have, where, I mean, you know, if you're talking to someone at the radio station, or you feel so validated, like someone mm-hmm. really valued your opinion on yeah. something and wants to take the time, which you can do over the internet, but it's nice to know that maybe if someone's talking about you on air or they do mm-hmm. something that like mm-hmm. your opinion is affecting other people as well.
And that's, we were comparing some station websites earlier today, and Rue was making really good points about the a local station here in Toronto, Indie 88.
Yeah.
And you go onto their homepage, and some of the first things you see are choose the music. And that's a part of the website where you can go and, you know, a lot of stations have that feature, but where is it located on their site?
Yeah.
They have it as one of the first things you see. They also have a banner, which is obviously an advertisement for indie bands to get shows or a yeah. contest or something like that.
And their entire mission statement, if you want to call it that, is about being a democratic radio station where the audience chooses the music.
Yeah, and it's also, they had a thing saying become a super friend.
Become a super friend, and if you join that particular group, they're going to send you emails which invite you to take surveys, which are really neat. They'll play you 7 seconds of a song and you have like a ranking system about how much you like it.
Yeah.
That chooses the playlist.
So rather than spewing information at me, I go onto your website and the first two or three things I see are you asking me or you inviting me to be a part of it
mm-hmm.
rather than here's what we are yeah. like it.
And a cacophony. There's sort of that difference between having sort of, and their blog area works more like a blog than a magazine, say.
Yeah.
So it actually, you get the feeling that it's being written by people who love music who are associated with the station rather than repeating what's on TMZ, which
well,
a lot of other
yeah,
station pages do.
I read a Mark Ramsey blog about how if your DJs are writing blogs just to write blogs, then they shouldn't at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
And this is something Rue is like, you know, with implementing blogging here at Dale Speaking.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not going to do it right, we shouldn't do it at all.
And same with artists. If
yeah.
you don't like to tweet, you might feel like, okay, well, I have to because everybody says have a Twitter
it's
account.
It's
going
to hurt you.
It's going to hurt you in the long run to tweet. Find a fan that loves
yeah.
everything you do. Have an official, recognized, what's the word I'm looking for, when somebody gives somebody else permission to act for them. Anyways, basically, the artist says, this is my official Twitter. It's being run by a fan. I give them information on tour dates and stuff, but go there because that person's going to be more interesting than,
yeah.
than you trying to force out a tweet.
It's a, like power of attorney kind
yeah,
of
like
thing.
Yeah, like power of attorney. Yeah,
sending
yeah.
it
proxy
over.
Almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. And you get a different feel from a station website that looks like it cares.
Yeah.
Compared to one that's just trying to draw eyes.
True.
I don't
yeah.
feel like the indie site is trying to draw eyes. I feel like they're trying to... The people are so passionate about the music that they're writing about the music they hear.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a big part of what this guy's talking about, is sort of like having some kind of unique content for your site. We'll get to that in a moment. Another quick note he makes is to make a clear streaming URL. For instance, if your station is called The Super Rock, I'm making it up off the top of my head, you might want thesuperrocklive.com or something to be your streaming URL, so people can find how to hear you online more easily.
Yeah.
That, and that's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Amber and I were trying to listen to stations, A, just in the States, which is, like, impossible because
mm-hmm.
they don't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes so much more sense to have one place where
exactly.
you can listen than trying to go through your website even just to get
yeah.
to get to it. And, like, even if you have a Listen Live button on your site, which you should still have, you should just send people to that... name live.com or name streaming. You could even use something like
yeah.
that. Just something simple to remember.
Yeah.
One example that does that well is Virgin in Toronto, which has, I believe, is player.toronto.virginradio.com or .ca. But it's very clear. It's not a string of letters and numbers.
Yeah.
And dashes.
And dashes and ampersands and stuff.
Yeah.
Another thing that we're going to talk about for probably a little while, because we did a lot of looking into it, is about HD. Now, what's HD? High def. We know
for
about
radio.
That for like, yeah, for radio. What's this? We know about that for like movies and for TV, but there has been HD in radio for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, in the States, it's been pretty embraced. not in Canada. In fact, it doesn't exist in Canada at this point, except for maybe a couple of stations that are testing it, I think, until April this year or something, was it, or June?
And actually, there were stations December 2014.
That's
it. They had until then, yeah.
That's it. And they're, the difference between HD and normal...
What we know
is that HD obviously has higher quality. So HD, and you can have HD on FM and on AM. What it does is it piggybacks a signal along with the existing HD, and that's if this is entirely a hybrid. So you can still pick up the FM radio on your regular FM radio at home, but if you have one that can pick up HD, you will get stuff like the name of the song that's playing. You may get a higher quality sound. And if it's just pure HD radio, if they got rid of the FM band and you were pure HD, they could broadcast on FM up to 300 kilobytes per second, which is nonsense to most people. Best way to describe it is you could broadcast surround sound in CD quality. So you could have your car rigged for surround sound and get like this perfectly sounding music playing in your car.
Okay.
Is the HD, is that something though that the station does or that you do in your car?
The station does.
The station
would broadcast in HD. You would still also get the name of the song. You may get weather updates, traffic updates, stuff like that can come along, basically piggybacking on the actual thing. With AM, it can improve the quality quite a lot. So you get better sound. You don't get that sort of like muffled sound you get with AM, which isn't a big deal because mostly it's talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'd also get the added benefit of AM, you can broadcast to a larger distance. So you could have decent quality sound over a longer distance.
Yeah.
Which gets into some technical stuff. Quick way to say it is that AM, you can hear further away, but it sounds worse. FM, you can hear, it doesn't go as far a region, like in miles or kilometers, but it sounds better. Now HD, his argument is it's time for HD to become more...
the norm?
More of the norm. That it's a digital bridge, is what he calls it, between netcasting, so that streaming live thing we were just talking about, and live on-air terrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
You can basically have the same feed going online as you do going to people's radios. Also... that the HD uses something called RDBS in the US. That's what sends out the information. That's how you get your stuff, like the names of songs and stuff. He's saying that everybody should be equipped to broadcast that now.
And I said to Amber, too, it would be really cool if it even said, like, the name of the DJ and the show title name that you were listening to on the station. So
yeah,
you
exactly.
knew more about the station also and
it
who
helps
was there when.
The
and,
brand of
right.
the personality.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of really interesting stuff. He suggests that that apps be close to recreating the old dial-based radio experience. That's maybe iffy to me. I know that Apple currently is trying to move away from, I think it's called transmorphic or something like that, which is making something look like what we recognize. So if you used to have the podcast app, it looked like an old reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah.
They've removed that because they're like, it's time to stop acting like it's what it used to be. Because now, because digital age has changed everything, why not make it better? The calendar app for phone right now, the iPhone right now, does not look like a calendar like it used to.
I really
like an old flip calendar.
Calendar.
But it's when they're trying to sort of design it, like, how do we make it look... how do we make it more useful rather than look like something that we understand?
Like something
yeah.
So that one I'm not exactly sure with, but I totally understand where he's going from.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, let's try to blend the experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But the next point is what I found most interesting. Number 7 on his is have truly unique programming. If you're running what dozens or hundreds of other stations are running, you're just a relay.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most important points that he makes.
And there's an article that Rue also provided to us that Don Searles is in, and it's an interview, and he comments on that exact statement. And somebody said to him, you said this following statement, do you see, and then their question to him was, do you see examples of unique programming? So do these exist? And he starts talking about public radio and PRX. And
yeah.
Rue, maybe if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. PRX is Public Radio Exchange, which is basically, I believe it's based in the States. It might be international. but they are where you get shows like Radiolab or This American Life, these 1 hour, almost like little magazines, audio magazines that have become the most popular podcasts in the world. Podcasts obviously are like radio shows, but you can download them. Mm-hmm. You get them online and you can listen to them on demand whenever you want to. I believe what he is trying to say, Doc is trying to say, is that the unique programming you get from public radio, where you have somebody put time and effort into tackling a subject in an interesting way in audio, specifically not video, but audio, that's the kind of thing you should look to when you're thinking about creating unique programming for your station. Now, how does that apply to a station that is a top 40 station,
mm-hmm.
or a rock station? That's sort of where the creative mind has to come out. That already is something that has happened in Canada, because a fellow named Alan Cross used to do a show about the ongoing history of new music, which he's now rebranded. I can't remember the name of it. Is it just the history of
I think it's just the
music?
History of music or whatever.
Exactly. And that show was an exact example of what Doc is talking about is needed on radio. That went on through, what, the 90s, I guess?
Yeah.
In Canada. And it's exactly what he's suggesting people should be moving towards on radio right now.
Mm-hmm.
At least introducing to their programming. Because unique programming is what sets you apart from everyone else. If you're playing a syndicated show that every other station is playing, then what sets you apart from all those other stations?
Yeah.
You need to have something that is yours. You create your own content that you also distribute by yourself. That's how you become successful right now, because, like I said, everybody is a content producer now.
Yeah.
Look at YouTube. The most popular YouTube people are not brands and aren't celebrities. They're people that became famous on YouTube for talking
creating
to the camera
content.
And creating their own content. And they're making so much money right now off of sitting in front of a camera and doing their own thing. And that these are just, mm-hmm. if you look at the top 10 of them, they're pretty much all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's only the top 10. There are thousands of people out there that are giving away free content that you go online to see. So how can that translate to radio?
It's interesting because, and you know, these are a lot of the points that Don is making in saying the sense that, you know, everybody participates. Everybody is a producer and a consumer. Nobody is a template. That's the hardest thing for those in mass marketing
mm-hmm.
to get their heads around. Every one of us is as different as our faces and fingerprints. That needs to be respected in a world where our faces and prints can produce, not just consume.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial radio has never done that. It has always been a necessary organ of mass marketing. This isn't me. This
yeah.
is Don's comments, by the way. I forgot
Doc.
To say that. It has to remain, or Doc. I keep calling him Don.
No,
sorry, Doc. Sorry. Sorry. Doc Searles. Has to remain a mass marketing medium to some extent and has to treat its listeners as templates, even while the audience needs to be engaged. How do you do both? Some stations will do nothing except mass marketing, which is kind of what we were talking
mm-hmm.
about at the beginning, except on an occasional shine of listener involvement. Others will be highly involved, for which the mass marketing side of it is one of the many expressions they have, rather than the main way they operate. That's why public radio and PRX are the future, and they know it. They know what they're doing because they're rubbers on the road. The listeners.
Yes.
So that's just an excerpt of his interview, but it definitely is supporting what you're saying in the sense of just the content, like we even spoke in our podcast last week about,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the stuff radio has to do. And I think it's really interesting that radio can no longer be, and as Doc says, not format, but program.
Yes.
So it's going from formats, so CHR, top 40, whatever, to more programs. Now, yet, does this mean, you know, trouble for music?
It doesn't
yeah,
have to be,
it doesn't
though.
Have
That's
to be.
Thing, yeah.
Programs can be focused around music.
Yeah.
And we were talking about examples where, you know, Bookie's new music era on the Edge when
yeah.
He was there, how that was a program. You were talking about
Alan Cross's
show, for example. That was a program. Josie Dye's Countdowns.
And
That's
morning shows are programs. Now, some of them have kind of become just sort of template themselves.
Yeah.
But the idea of the morning zoo or the morning show host going on for 4 or 5 hours, that's programming. And another point that he makes is that podcasting should be a normal and easy part of your mix offerings. most of those morning shows became podcasts. So by the afternoon, you could get a music and commercial removed podcast made up of all the conversations that the morning show hosts had.
Yeah.
And that's the other great thing about radio is radio, so long as you have interesting personalities, you have podcasts. All you have to do is take something you already broadcasted, cut it down, and release it as a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And podcasting is a great way to reach a lot of people and to be heard in somebody's car when they aren't listening to radio.
Yeah. And I know that at Canadian Music Week, at some of the radio conferences, they were talking about personalities and having them be more engaging in the sense of, you know, and I think it's interesting. I follow somebody named Adam Wilde,
mm-hmm.
who's on a radio station here in Toronto, and he's a personality on his own on that state, on Twitter at least. And he has people talking to him all the time, and it isn't necessarily, here's what's going on with my job. It's, I was at the Leaf game, and he ended up being on TV the other day. And I know this just from Twitter and people retweeting him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sit and read his feed. It pops up, and so it's just interesting that, so to me, that's somebody who is becoming a personality.
Yeah.
He represents something.
Yeah.
And he has gone out of just doing what he does at his job to being a personality.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's interesting.
Now, another point that we can kind of banter about is thinking in terms of relationships and not just listeners. So he was saying essentially that your listeners, a radio station's listeners, have the same kinds of powers of communication that a radio station has. And it used to be that if you were a broadcaster, you kind of controlled the media. But now the listeners control the media as much, because you might have a listener that has more Twitter followers than you do.
Yep.
So building relationships with people one-on-one, and this goes back to the idea of seeing yourself as a radio station and a listener rather than a radio station and an audience. Build relationships, because the closer a relationship you build, the more likely it is they're going to spread the word about you.
Right.
Because you're going to want to, if you build respect with somebody, they're going to feel more involved with what you're doing and want to share it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like you feel like it's your own thing. Whenever I would get a song requested played on the radio, I kind of felt like I was a part of something.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like a part of that station all of a sudden. Indie does that really well. And I'm sure we're missing a whole bunch of stations in Canada that have really good relationships with our listeners and have an open concept like Indie does.
Yeah.
And I hope that they get in touch with us and tell us, you idiots, you didn't talk about us, because then next week we can do like a corrections and follow up and say, here are three stations that do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to spread the word about those, because that's sort of the future, at least to me.
Yeah.
And we'll keep an eye on this and maybe do some follow-ups in future. But before we get to the last song, let's just close off the episode. My name is Rue, because we forgot to do introductions.
I'm India.
And I'm Amber.
If you'd like to find out a bit more about... Blah, 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 I have had trouble speaking today.
Yes.
If you would like to find out more about Dale Speaking, we're at dalespeaking.com, where you can find our blogs. You can find what clients we've worked with. If you're curious, just what do we do when we're not podcasting? You can get an idea of what we're up to and see if we're trustworthy or not.
Yeah.
Go find out for yourself.
We're just a bunch of bankers.
Yeah, just a bunch of bankers talking about music.
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter, you can find us on Facebook, and you can find our new video on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/DaleSpeaking, with 13 questions for artists to start off the new year. It's still time, we're still in January. You can still plan for the new year.
Make goals. And achieve them.
Do-do-do-do! And if you tell us what goals you've set, maybe we'll keep an eye on you.
Maybe.
We're pretty busy.
We'll be your coaches.
Maybe. Does anybody have any final words?
We said a lot of words.
We said a lot of words already. So, who would like to tell us about this week's song?
Secret Broadcast. God love them.
God love them. From Calgary?
Yes, originally from Calgary. Secret Broadcast are an awesome, awesome band. And they are currently residing in Toronto. They have a lovely home at E1 Music Canada, which is... a group we work with for a lot of artists that we have worked with in the past and are currently working with. But Secret Broadcast, just released their brand new single to radio on Monday. It is called Filthy Souls, and there's a new album coming from them in a couple of months. This entire collection of songs that is new was produced by a producer named Adam Casper.
Who?
Adam Casper, you ask? He is based in Seattle. I don't know if I said that, but he has worked with several bands, including Nirvana, Soundgarden, Queens of the Stone Age, Pearl Jam, and that's just to name a very small list.
Who?
Who are they? So Adam, and he's also a three-time Grammy Award. Mm-hmm. So they've got a really great, person backing them up. Mm-hmm. And Secret Broadcast really benefited from working with Adam, and you can really hear it in the sound. So we're really excited about this record and what's to come from Secret Broadcast in 2014. But in the meantime, here's Filthy Souls.
Yay! Woo!